The Orange Mike. Hello, Orange Army. I think if I go into our Rainbow Nation, I may say Sanbonani, Ngithi Molweni, Ngithi Abusheni, and. So much I can say. Welcome to the UJFM podcast. Now, as much as on our UJFM app, I think you've heard so many other versions of our podcast. This one is just a bit different. We are recording it in a brand new studio. It's looking absolutely lovely. I think if you look around, I'm just going to give you an idea because, of course, you cannot see. But there's a few plastics in here to showcase that, you know, everything that is in here is quite new, which means our guests, you know, I think are quite iconic to be the ones to grace our brand new studios as we record this podcast. Now, we're about to have a conversation where we discuss the University of Johannesburg's disciplinary code and procedure, the grievance policy guideline, and the incapacity policy and procedure. As you know, you might know, Hori, it's important that the UJ staff members are all aware of all these three policies in a very, I think, summarized manner. I was, you know, looking at some of them, 22 pages long, and I'm like, let's just, you know, take this into a conversation and make it easy for all the UJ staff members to get exactly what all these policies are about. And of course, joining us is Miss Ingabo Ditebe Tole, who's employed by the University of Johannesburg as an employee relations officer, as well as Mrs. Bertha Shabangu, who's employed by the university as well, but now as the employee relations specialist. Ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for having us.
We are super excited to be having you. Now, I already am very intrigued at what is the difference between an employee relations officer and an employee relations specialist.
Okay, it's probably by hierarchy. Ms. Shabangu is my line manager.
Okay.
She's the more learned, more experienced in terms of hierarchy. I'm joking. Yes, yeah. It's just a hierarchical issue.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you both do deal with employee relations, right? And of course, the employee relations unit here is one of the centers of excellence within the University of Johannesburg's human capital management. And it's responsible for quite a number of things, which amongst others include collective bargaining, handling disciplinary cases, facilitating grievances, contributing as well to the drafting and reviewing employment law policies and training in that regard, right? So I want us to start by unpacking the disciplinary code and procedure. Coming to you, of course, Ms. Ingabo. What is the purpose of disciplinary code and procedure?
Okay. Every employer has standards, rules, and regulations that they set. This is UJ's disciplinary code. Mm-hmm. It's basically saying this is the conduct that is acceptable and this is the conduct that is not. And if conduct is not acceptable, then unfortunately you have to go through a disciplinary process. Mm. So that is the purpose, that it needs to be uniform.
Yeah.
It needs to be fair when applied.
Yeah.
And consistently. So sure. Those are the questions that you need to answer.
And before maybe we get to, I think, decoding this code and mm-hmm. its procedure thereof, maybe tell us who it applies to first so that they open their ears more as we're about to unpack it, you know?
Thank you so much for that question. And that is really important because, as you had indicated, we both, are stationed at the employee relations unit of the university. And so our main purpose is to make sure that employees, and by employees I'm referring to anyone that is actually contracted to perform certain responsibilities and duties for the university, understand what is contained in different policies of the university. And so the disciplinary code will apply to an employee of the university. So that is, the long and short of it.
That's beautiful. And back to you, of course, Ms. Ditebe Tole. Tell me about the different levels, because I know there's different levels to this disciplinary code. Tell us more about them, of course, in your attempt, I think, to unpacking it for us.
Yes, we have what we call, there's a formal procedure.
Okay.
And there's an informal procedure. You know, your daily verbal reprimands, where a line manager would be saying, Inga, do not do that.
Yeah.
Can you kindly improve on this? You know, daily operations.
Okay.
Then there's a formal procedure where there's a level one, depending on the type of misconduct, or should I say the gravity thereof, how serious this misconduct is, or less serious it is, then you handle it at level one.
Yeah.
The same with a level two. Level one may progress to a level two, meaning when the line manager wants to correct your behavior. Mm-hmm. Remember, disciplinary, it's meant to be corrective, not punitive.
Yeah.
So they would then correct it. But he has to call a meeting so that when he issues you with a written warning, which is in line with the policy that is our level one, you are aware of what the case is, what the allegations are, and you're given an opportunity to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our level one.
Okay.
It is usually at floor level with assistance of an HCMBP.
Yeah.
Then there's a level two.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Same process. But then there's the most serious level, which is a level three.
Okay.
Those are the very serious cases.
Mm.
It could have graduated from one, two, until it ends at three.
Yeah.
Alternatively, it could be a very serious misconduct that doesn't even warrant a one or a two. Let's say theft. Obviously, you'll find yourself at the level three.
Sure.
This is a formal disciplinary hearing, fully fledged, fully blown, where you'll have to answer your case.
Mm.
Yes.
And speaking of theft, you know, is stealing a toilet paper there by the toilets, you know, something that also qualifies as theft? Because I think when we look at certain items, we think it's not theft when it's this. It's only theft when it's a bigger item. Would that be theft as well?
Yes. Mm. When you take what doesn't belong to you.
Yeah.
Without permission or authority, it is definitely theft.
Yes.
And those type of cases are handled by our unit ER.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I hope you heard that, Orange Army. What types of cases now, back to you, Mrs. Shabangu, has the university dealt with so far? Has anyone stealt maybe a toilet paper?
Oh, you'll be surprised.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised at that. Indeed so. We've had several cases where one has stolen toilet paper.
Oh,
and unfortunately, like Ingaboy had explained, then we had to apply the disciplinary code that the university does have in place.
Yeah.
And unfortunately go to that level three that Ingaboy was elaborating on.
Yeah.
So we've had those cases.
Mm.
We've also dealt with time-related misconduct.
Okay.
This is where you think, oh, I can actually come in very late at work. But remember, we had indicated that the policy applies to employees. So as an employee, you sign a contract of employment.
Sure.
And in that contract of employment, it is clear as to what time you need to be reporting to work.
Mm-hmm.
And time-related is not only when you report to work. It's also when you leave the university. And also your lunch break is defined in your contract of employment. And so it becomes important for an employee to understand those rules and provisions that are contained in the disciplinary code.
Yeah.
And further to that, when we have issues of absenteeism, we're also talking about someone who's passing, you know, the time idly or loafing, failing to complete tasks, for example. You're at work, but we see your face, but you're actually not even doing the work. So that is also part of the time-related misconduct that we're referring to. We've also seen cases of theft. We've spoken about the theft of toilet papers, but then we've seen theft of other resources that the university has, like your laptops. We've seen a growing number of such as well. We unfortunately have seen a growing number of sexual harassment, bullying, and harassment cases. And so that becomes a concern. But just to name a few, those are the cases that we have dealt with so far.
Incredible. And of course, we're speaking from an employee point of view. For student purposes, which department within the university deals with such? There is me in the library. I take someone's laptop. It does not belong to me. Is it a matter that you deal with, or there's another department that caters to that?
Yeah, there's absolutely another department that deals with that.
Okay.
As ER, we only handle cases that are related to employees.
And
so
incredible.
The student affairs, the student judicial services that actually do handle disciplinary processes that involves a student.
That's beautiful. And just before we close off this conversation on disciplinary code and procedure, I just want to know, what are some of the main lessons would you say the staff of the UJ needs to be aware of in relation to this particular code?
What is important, in law, the mm-hmm. ignorance of the law is not justified. Mm. So it's important to know the code.
Yeah.
Familiarize yourself with the code. Be cognizant of the fact that there are rules by the employer and you need to follow them and avoid contravening the rules, the policies of the employer, to avoid finding yourself in such a process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible. Now, I would love for us to move to yet another, I would say, part of our conversation where we now get into the grievance procedure. Now, we know that there could be a lot of things one may not be happy about in an environment in which they're working in. It could be because of the person they work with, their colleagues, or it could just be even the environmental resources that are available to them where they say, I don't like working with this microphone no more because I feel it does not enable me to fully practice my job to the best of my abilities, right? So maybe let's start there. What is a grievance, especially I think in relation to what you at the employee relations office deal with?
It is exactly how you've defined it.
Oh, yes.
It is exactly how you've defined it.
Am I able to go to the Faculty of Law and say they should give me a degree because I can define these things?
No. And unfortunately, it should be very reasonable. Mm. It cannot be unreasonable. Yeah. And yes, where an employee feels that they are unhappy about a certain aspect of the job or even a colleague, they then have a right to lodge a grievance. Yes. We'll entertain it. Assess it and advise accurately.
That's beautiful. And because it's also a policy, what does this one then entail briefly, and who again does it apply to?
All right. Thank you again. This is a very important policy to understand because, like you said, it can be that you are not satisfied at work.
Yeah.
There are many reasons why one would not be satisfied at work. And therefore, it's important to know that within the grievance procedure or policy of the university, there are different levels that which one needs to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, with regards to the same processes of discipline, with the grievance, there are informal processes, and there are also formal processes. So the first point of contact for an employee who find themselves feeling aggrieved would be that informal process.
Yeah.
You speak to your line managers. So there's always that room to be human and talk to your manager about the issues that you encounter at work.
Sure.
So that will be the informal process. You approach the line manager directly.
Mm.
But of course, there are instances where the line manager is the one that causes the dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
And therefore, it becomes important to know who then is the next in line, and you will approach that next in line.
Yeah.
So it goes in that order. So if you're not happy with the next in line's response, then there's a process that unfolds where it has to come to ER. So there's a form that is actually included in our own disciplinary code. You complete that form detailing what you are aggrieved about and the date that which the incident occurred. The fact that you've approached the line and that there has not been any result that has yielded that approach, and then you eventually get to sit in a grievance meeting, where the inquiry is actually investigated. But it happens that when you are not happy, you can then raise that unhappiness outside of the university once all the processes in terms of the grievance procedure has been fully exhausted. Then you can refer the matter to the CCMA, either for unfair labor practice.
Yeah.
Often that will be the case.
Mm.
So that is, in short, the process that would be applicable in as far as the procedure is concerned.
And now I'm interested in what actually constitutes a reasonable grievance, because I don't think I should come to you and say, well, I went to the kitchen at our station and there was no sugar and I couldn't make my coffee. I don't believe that makes a reasonable grievance. What constitutes a fair and reasonable grievance from an employee?
Okay. It should be reasonable, as you're saying. It might not make sense to me and you.
Okay.
But one thing that I've learned in this profession is sometimes when you just give somebody an ear, you listen to what affects them or what they might believe affects them.
Mm-hmm.
What we do as ER, we consult policies.
Okay.
We consult case law, we advise accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So if, let's say, there's an example where I'm supposed to get a benefit and I'm not getting it, and somebody's raising it, you look into it, you investigate, you find whether there's merit or not, is there substance, you know? And once you've attended to something, and whether or not it's in my favor as an employee, the fact that you listened, you attended to it, and then you responded, that is enough.
Okay, that's incredible. Now, what happens next when the staff member is not happy with the grievance?
Okay. You would then have exhausted the levels, as Bertha has explained them. And then if you're not happy at floor level, which is probably at your level one, you then have a right to ask that it be escalated to the next in line, who then listen objectively and with hopes that they might listen to it and make a different determination. With grievances, what the outcome usually is that you would want it to be resolved.
Okay.
Basically, you're advocating for labor peace, harmony in the workspace so that the relationships are nurtured. You know, and employees can work together and happy. It's basically about the morale.
Yeah.
Keeping the morals of the employees happy.
Beautiful. I love the fact that you mentioned, I think, colleagues working well together. Because, you know, if we're going to speak of the fastest growing university in Africa, it means that each and every aspect of that university has to be effectively, you know, working, you know, when we speak to this, right? So please give us maybe some of the practical examples of the cases you've dealt with before, where, you know, certain conducts did constitute a grievance, but some did not.
Okay, so we've dealt with a promotion grievance.
Okay.
So as an employee, you apply for a job, you say, that is a job for me, and you of the view that you are fitting for the role, and you meet all the requirements in terms of qualification and experience. And so you're not happy because you're not shortlisted, and so you lodge a grievance. So we've dealt with matters where indeed, so you feel like Ingeborg indicated, what would be less important for some
is very important,
but it's very important for because I mean you're thinking this is my next career move. So that is promotion, and then we have victimization. So you feel that, you know, in the workplace that which you work in, you're victimized. It can be by a fellow employee, perhaps by your line manager. So we've dealt with such such cases as well. Perhaps Inga can come in with some of the examples that we've dealt with as well.
Okay. What we would then say probably doesn't constitute a grievance, although employees might think it does. When you are being disciplined in retaliation, then you want to lodge a grievance to run away from the disciplinary process. But that is not how it works. Basically, what will happen is if you are disciplined and there's substance to it, you will get an opportunity to state the side, your side of the story. So we will not be entertaining it in that aspect. So that is not a grievance.
I think what I love about you ladies stating that it's not a matter of it's not as important to us, is that it comes from now an objective point of view instead of a subjective approach to dealing with these matters, which I think is absolutely incredible. Now,
May I add that the policy does also entail that in instances where, you know, an issue is in relation to sexual harassment, bullying and harassment, and we indicated earlier on that some of the disciplinary cases that we've dealt with, the majority thereof of late relates to bullying. So there is a policy in place. Colleagues can find that, you know, through the intranet. So when there is a bullying complaint, harassment, so it is advisable for colleagues to rather make use of that particular policy. Because, yes, indeed, so even the grievance procedure does encourage that approach. So those type of matters are dealt with differently. I think colleagues might be listening and thinking, I'm being bullied. Do I take the same approach or what do I do? So the advice would then be to seek, you know, advice on how to lodge a formal bullying complaint or harassment complaint.
Yeah.
And it is investigated and done or dealt with differently.
Sure.
Yeah.
So now, speaking of bullying, I know Utmas Kula, in school, bullying is other students calling you names and sometimes even being physical with you. Yeah. Give me your food and all. Would it be something like that as well in the workplace, or it tends to be different, especially looking at maybe some of the cases you've dealt with in the past?
Yes, bullying for definition, like the way kids understand it, you do have such instances in the workplace.
Yeah.
Usually from people of authority.
Mm-hmm.
They put you down, they disregard you, they sometimes ignore you. Mm. You know, when it comes to benefits, you might be deprived because you're not necessarily vibing with their energy, you know?
Yeah.
They might then bully you. So, yes, it is there. And if you feel that this person is making my workspace intolerable, I cannot cope because it's a condescending kind of behavior that I get from him, or even the energy is not right, treating me differently than anybody else, I'm targeted in some way or form.
Yeah.
You have the right then to lodge a grievance, you know, and an investigation might reveal whether there's substance or not.
Yeah.
So that is what is important.
Okay, ladies, these are absolutely incredible. Now, before we move on to the incapacity policy, any parting shots, maybe any important, I think, items that we did not touch on the grievance procedure?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you. You did mention that the policy document is quite long. So I think it's important for colleagues to understand that there are timelines attached to when one lodges a grievance in that regard, so a formal grievance. So there's a 30 days period from the date on which they became aware of that particular grievance. And from that, it means that if they do not lodge a grievance within the 30 days period, then there's what we call a condonation application. So meaning that this is an application to say, can you condone the late filing of this grievance? So that is an important aspect to explain. And the second one would be the fact that, you know, yes, you will come on your own to say, I feel aggrieved. But you are, in terms of the policy, permitted to be assisted by either a fellow employee or be permitted by a trade union if you do belong to one. But that union should be recognized in that regard. So, but also just to add that with the disciplinary code that we've discussed, you are permitted to be represented by a lawyer. Or a trade union or a fellow employee. But with a grievance, you're only allowed to be assisted by a fellow employee or a trade union and not a lawyer.
Do you, is there a reason behind that?
Because, I mean, the sensitivity of these matters, you don't want to turn a grievance into an argument or that you're dealing with a misconduct. So that is the reason why.
Because at the end, we're just trying to bring about harmony.
You're trying to build and unite people. Resolve.
Incredible. Incapacity policy and procedure thereof. I'm excited about this one simply because I looked at this word incapacity and said, oh, okay, now what is this? So please do let us know, unpack this for us, decode this for us. What does the word incapacity mean, especially from an employee relations point of view?
Okay, maybe incapacity can be then defined as me being unable to. Incapacity.
All right.
I'm not able to. Capacity, you're capable.
Incapacity, you're not.
So it's not such a big word.
And maybe from an employee point of view, what are some of the instances where I'm incapable, you know?
We, in terms of this policy, we have two aspects to it. We have what we call incapacity poor work performance. We have incapacity ill health. So this stems from the Labor Relations Act, right? We have what we call Schedule 8, the Code of Good Practice Dismissal, Item 10 and 11. It's what deals, even 8, sorry, poor work performance, from starting from 8. Item 8 deals with poor work performance, and then 10 and 11, it deals with incapacity, ill health, and injuries in the workplace. So it is that workforce that is not so well or not so capable.
Sure.
So this is what this policy
is. I love that. I love the fact that it is in line with the South African law as well, you know, which makes it even, I think, a valid law. Because I think, as far as I believe, Section 2 of the Constitution does state that any law in South Africa that is not consistent with the Constitution finds itself being invalid. So I love that. Now, please summarize the incapacity policy and procedure here at the University of Johannesburg for us.
All right. No, thank you. As this Ingabo indicated, we do have you know, incapacity due to poor performance as well as incapacity due to ill health. And again, we you know, make reference to our own legislation, and that is the Labor Relations Act. And so we've in terms of the policy, there's a process that which dictates on how to handle incapacity cases that relates to poor work performance. Poor work performance is when an employee is not performing to the standard that is acceptable in terms of their own performance contract. Remember, all of us at UJ, we enter into a performance contract every year. And twice in a year, we get to review that performance contract as to whether we are meeting the standards or not. And it will be important to note that if during those assessment meetings that are held twice a year, and the line manager points out certain areas that are not meeting the standard, then it becomes important for the employee and the employer to have conversations about how to improve the performance. And so the policy talks about those type of processes. How do we then draw the line as to whether one is actually not able to perform to the standard that is acceptable to a point that the incapacity that, you know, Ingabo was, you know, defining does take force. And then we also have the incapacity due to ill health. So this goes without saying. So ill health and injury. So if one is ill, this includes mental illness, because I think one thing that we don't talk about more is mental illness as well. So any form of incapacity due to ill health or injury is also contained in the policy that we're talking about. So there are different stages that which, you know, is applied. Remember, with misconduct, the approach is discipline. But with incapacity, the approach is counseling. So it is important to follow all those steps where conversations are firstly held with the staff member. So say with the incapacity due to ill health cases. So there ought to be thorough investigation into the illness so as to identify whether the illness is temporary or it's permanent. Because if it's temporary, then there's a process and there's a separate process for permanent you know, illnesses as well. So the policy does give those guidelines in as far as the process that ought to follow. To be followed, rather, is concerned.
That's incredible. And I think we've already covered the fact that this or these policies that we're talking about all apply to UJ staff members. What are the important steps now that a UJ staff member needs to be aware of in line with this incapacity policy?
Okay, like Ms. Shabangu has indicated, it is at the point for poor work performance, it is at that point of the assessment that it then is identified that Inga is not meeting the performance standard as contracted. So it is from that point that the line manager has to then assess the employee if there's an intervention needed to help you get to that standard to improve. They should then apply that. You just don't sit and say, I'm waiting for the final assessment. I am going to underrate you because you're not performing. That would be considered unfair if you have to prove such a case. Because you need to take the employee step by step. Be active in your role as a line manager. If Bertha is not happy with my work or my performance standard, she then immediately must then intervene and say, Inga, where are you lacking? Because I can see here it's not, what can I help you with to get you to perform on that standard? So those are the steps. It's an interactive role. You don't relax and not do anything, because it will get worse if you're not going to employ interventions. The same with ill health. You're not going to sit and see that there's forever sick notes and employees bringing sick notes, sick notes, and you're not acting on this. Luckily with UJ, we have what we call we have a forum that deals with incapacity cases. So there we advise each other as relevant stakeholders to say, okay, when an employee is booked off sick, there's 14 days, you flag it.
Yeah.
It's an important case because now it means you need to focus on this case.
Yeah.
So that if you have to then report to the insurer in case there's going to be a temporary boarding off of some sort in terms of the incapacity route, we know. And the relevant documentation is there in terms of signals, leave profile, and all of those. So it's important.
And I think another part that is very important, you know, are the role players that are involved from when we identify the problem of an employee being incapable of performing to their best of their abilities, right? Until a point where we now seek solutions to try and see if we can help, if we can intervene. Who are those key role players that are involved in that entire process?
All right. So just reminding you that we have incapacity due to ill health and injury, and we also have incapacity due to poor performance. And so with poor performance, the role players would, as indicated earlier on, there is a performance contract that is in place. So that will obviously be the employee himself or herself and the line management. So but there are instances where a PIP, we call it a PIP, stands for Performance Improvement Plan, that is put in place between the line manager and the staff member. So there might be involvement from other external role players, such as coaching, or those that coach the employee or service providers. And we also have HR, HCM BPs that actually assist with such a process.
Yeah.
And with the fact that there is an incapacity forum that focuses on issues of ill health, we do have different role players in that as well. So we have the HCM business partners.
And this is human capital management?
Correct. Yes. And then we have the employee relations team. We have the wellness team.
Yeah.
We have the remuneration and benefits team.
Yeah.
We also have the clinic that also partake in all these processes. So we really do take pride in this type of forums because we get to, you know, understand the extent at which the illness that we're referring to is concerned and the processes that we need to then take based on the disciplinary code. So those are the role players in short.
I take pride myself as part of the Orange Army. You know, when you mention all these different people who are, you know, part of this incredible process, it makes it, I think, very evident that you at the employee relations office are quite very serious. You take these matters very seriously and you truly care about the, I would say, wellness of the employees of the university, which I think is really incredible. Now, please give me any practical examples, once again, of instances where a staff member is deemed incapacitated for probably ease or for understanding.
Okay. Remember when I started, I said incapacity. I'm not capable to, right?
Yeah.
So that is incapacity, especially for poor performance. Yeah. You would find that there's just an example, Inga doesn't do her job.
Yeah.
Is it because I'm incapacitated or am I derelicting in my duty?
Yeah.
So you see, the other one is a misconduct.
Yeah.
And the other one, if it means I can't. I'm not performing because I cannot.
Yeah.
Probably then I'm incapacitated. But then, like Bertha said, that is where the improvement plan must come in.
Yeah.
But if it is just me who has experience, who's been working on my job for years and I'm not meeting the standard, then that is dereliction of duty, it's a misconduct.
Yeah.
I'm not following instructions, I'm insubordinate, and I'm not doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
That is the misconduct aspect of it.
As we're having this conversation, ladies, you've both mentioned just a few differences between incapacity and misconduct. Maybe dive into that a bit more, you know, to bring about an understanding to a listening employee of the university as to, well, if you do this, you are incapacitated, but if you do this, we deem that as a misconduct, and these are the repercussions for both or for one of each. Yeah.
Which one take? Okay, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, we have this, what people call abuse of sick leave.
Yeah.
You find, as a line manager who's very effective, you'll then be able to identify a trend. Somebody doesn't come to work on a Monday and a Friday. Are they sick? You see, when it starts raising that question, that every week, Inga, Monday or Friday or Monday and Friday, she's not at work.
Just the days before and after the weekend.
Exactly,
Inga.
Extending my holidays, you know. So you find that there are people who are really genuinely sick.
Yeah.
And you then have to look at that and assess and evaluate. And that's where your business partnering also comes in with the line manager. They can then refer the employee to the occupational health clinic for an assessment by our own occupational health practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it is a very complex medical case, then they can bring in a second opinion by specialist to look at the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are part of the examples.
Yeah, and when it comes to now, the result of each, when the employee relations office has, I would say, made a decision that, well, we believe this was truly an incapacity, and in some cases, we believe this was a misconduct. In each of these cases, what is normally the repercussion, the end result, the consequence?
All right. So as earlier on, we've explained that with incapacity cases, the approach would be counseling.
Yeah.
Whereas with misconduct, the approach would be discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll find that the misconduct cases are dealt with via the disciplinary code that we've already discussed.
Yeah.
And then with incapacity cases, we have that incapacity policy as already discussed.
Mm.
So there are points where, as indicated earlier on, the level three disciplinary process that we had outlined, the result is often that a staff member is dismissed.
Yeah.
And then with incapacity, when all the assistance has been provided, for example, when you talk about poor performance, if one is a cleaner and conversations were held with the staff member in as far as the work is concerned, and there has not been an improvement, even after conversations were held and ample time and training was provided, then unfortunately in terms of the process that we have within the incapacity policy, there's a last stage, and that is where, unfortunately, a formal inquiry needs to be held.
Yeah.
That inquiry is chaired by an independent chairperson, where the employee will be given an opportunity to explain and give his or her own version as to why the university should not proceed and terminate the services. Unfortunately, if the chairperson finds that the only appropriate action to take would be termination, and that will be, unfortunately, the case.
And I think, Orange, I mean, this is exactly what makes our university a well-oiled machine. Each and every department is dedicated to making sure that this is a beautiful work environment, but also an environment where we produce nothing but excellence. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Before I let you go, any parting words? I think I would say words of advice based on all the experience that you've had in the department to the UJ staff members.
All right. I think from my end, it is important for all of us as employees that are employed by the university to understand the policies that are applicable to us. Like we said earlier on, with any environment, there are rules. So it's important to all of us to familiarize ourselves with those rules and to understand the consequences of not, you know, adhering to such rules. UJ is a very great environment to grow yourself, to, you know, make sure that you take advantage, you leverage on advantages that exist. But it's also a university that takes and, you know, takes its own work and achievements seriously. So it becomes important for colleagues to then realize what is it that is applicable to them, so as to continue to be part of this beautiful institution.
That's incredible. Those are my Singapore projects.
Indeed, the reputation of UJ is everything. And there are conducts that UJ will not associate itself with. Zero tolerance. So my advice is, let's just come and do what we're contracted to do, treat people fairly, with respect, maintain labor peace. Thank you.
That's absolutely incredible. UJ, this was your employee relations officer, Ms. Ingeborg Ditebe Tole, as well as our employee relations specialist, Mrs. Bertha Shabangu. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us on this beautiful conversation as we raise awareness to the entire nation of the Orange Army. Now, remember to tell your friends that this podcast is available on the UJFM app, which is available on all app stores. Be sure to check it out. It's absolutely free. You get all this information for absolutely free. Why? Because we love you just like that. This was the UJFM podcast with myself, Zethembe Mlambo. Ingqungqule yamaphiko phezu kwendaba khala madoda akhala abafazi. Ngisale kahle.
Thank you.
The Orange Mic. The Orange Mic.